Excessive alcohol consumption is responsible for 10% of deaths among working-age adults in the United States. That's according to a new report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And it is the fourth leading cause of preventable death. What's your reaction to that, and what should be done about this? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Thursday, July 10th. We'll talk about the health risks of excessive alcohol consumption, and we'll talk about why this is such a problem and what we can do to reduce the number of people who die due to alcohol abuse. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Dr. Brenda Rooney. She co-directs the health promotion and disease prevention activities for Gunderson Health System. She also serves on the Population Health Committee of the La Crosse Medical Health Science Consortium and serves on the community's Alcohol Project Evaluation Team. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what is the main takeaway from this report from the CDC with regard to alcohol?
Well, I think that what's most important is to see that it is actually the fourth leading cause of preventable death. When we think about preventable death, we think about tobacco use and obesity and injury. And we really, I don't think that alcohol has ever really risen to the top five on that list. I went out and looked at what are the top causes of death among working adults, and alcohol is not on that list. So they're going to have to revise the list, I think. And the reason for that really is because alcohol isn't on a death certificate.
Yeah. Well, what is on the death certificate? What is alcohol doing that is causing so many people to die?
Well, that's a good question. So alcohol, the number one cause of alcohol-related death would be an accident or an injury, so a motor vehicle crash or injury. But it's also significantly related to cancers and heart disease, to diabetes and a variety of other diseases, and it's sort of hidden then because you don't see when someone has heart disease but also has chronic alcohol disease, you usually don't see alcohol listed on the death certificate as the main cause. It's usually listed as heart disease.
Yeah, and I didn't hear like liver failure on your list.
Yeah, it's not in the top five.
Yeah, but now you say that alcohol abuse can lead to cancer. What cancers can be caused by that?
Certainly, for women, breast cancer is there's a correlation between alcohol use and breast cancer. Alcohol can change the metabolism of the liver and the brain, and so it certainly could be related to some forms of liver cancers.
What is meant by excessive alcohol consumption in terms of? I mean, if I have a few drinks a week or a drink a night, am I going to die earlier than other people?
So the study looked at three forms of excessive drinking, and two of them are real common. We look at those all the time. One is binge drinking, and binge drinking is defined as four drinks or more for women on one occasion, and for men, five drinks or more on one occasion. Sometimes we refer to that as the occasion is within 2 hours. So it's quite a bit of drinking within a short period of time, four drinks for women, five for male. Another form of excessive drinking is heavy alcohol consumption, and they define that as 8 or more drinks per week for females and 15 or more drinks a week for males.
Mm-hmm.
And then the study also looked at any alcohol consumption during pregnancy.
Yeah, and so this is binge drinking is different than heavy drinking, but is that right?
Yeah. But really, when you think about heavy alcohol consumption, 8 drinks a week for females, that's one drink a day plus one
Yeah.
is heavy alcohol consumption.
The study says that 1 in 6 adults between the ages of 20 and 65 reported binge drinking at least 4 times a month. But researchers say that that number is probably higher because people lie about their alcohol use. So,
do we
have a rough idea of what the figures really are?
Well, really, it varies from population to population and study to study, and how you ask it. The most recent population estimate for Wisconsin has us around 16%. And the United States around 7 to 8%, which is, like you just said, really a low estimate. We have a variety of estimates for our community or for our county, and the rate, depending on what the population is, the rate is much higher. If you ask our college-age students, the rate is anywhere between 55 and 65%.
Wow.
If you survey working adults in our community, it's for 26 and over, it's about 35%. So I think that the ballpark is closer to about 35% for working adults.
Yeah, that's I remember those figures. Wisconsin usually is at the top of the list
for
binge drinking. Yeah, and then some say that's because we're more honest than the rest of the nation, but I don't know about that. The number of people who binge drink skyrocketed in the 90s and leveled off in the early 2000s. To what do you attribute the climb and the plateau?
Not really sure. I think that these rates fluctuate a lot with the economy. You might see an increase on the alcohol use when you see a decrease in other drug use, and then you might start to see the reverse happens. So, you know, we may have seen a change in the marijuana, recreational marijuana use when the alcohol use went down. So it's really kind of hard to say exactly. And we saw in the rates that I look at across time, we saw a dramatic change when the economy went bad. And when certain things happened, like when 9/11 occurred, we saw a huge increase in the amount of alcohol consumption. It's sort of a fatalistic approach to life. We heard other risky behaviors increased around 9/11, and that kind of has a lasting effect for a short time.
So what is the cost of this excessive drinking, the heavy drinking and the binge drinking, not just to the person doing it, but to society in general?
Well, the study that you're talking about today estimates the cost of premature preventable deaths around $223.5 billion, with a B. And so that's huge. I think the years of potential life loss is what a lot of us look at, because the dollar amount, when it gets over a million, is too much for me. But the years of potential life loss is the key. So what is that? That means that if I died at age 65, I lost 10 years. They go by at the age of 75. I lost 10 years of productive life. And so they look at every year of life lost based on when you die. Someone that dies at 35 lost 40 years of potential life. And when you add all of that up, it's 12% of all years of potential life lost for 20 to 64-year-olds. So 10% of deaths, but 12% of all years of potential life lost. So those are years of productivity of being moms and dads and grandpas and grandmas and working and all of that. And that, to me, is what the cost is.
Yeah. Well, the co-author of the CDC paper said that raising the alcohol tax and encouraging doctors to talk with their patients about alcohol abuse are possible remedies, or could reduce the amount of alcohol abuse. Let's start with the alcohol tax first. How much of an effect do you think hiking the alcohol tax would make?
Well, alcohol, like other substances, tobacco, for example, we know the relationship between price and consumption is strong, very strongly correlated. So, and the same is true with alcohol. So raising the price on alcohol would certainly lower the consumption. And it's specifically for populations that are very price sensitive, which would include people who probably are at highest risk of alcohol consumption, so lower socioeconomic status folks, people who aren't earning as much, would be much more affected by increased price in the cost of alcohol. And I say it increased price because it could be an increase in the tax or it could be an increase in the cost that the makers of alcohol, the distributors of alcohol could import on people. So.
And as for encouraging doctors to talk about alcohol abuse to their patients, isn't that happening now?
It does. It's not as frequent as you would probably assume. The guidelines for that are a little sketchy. I mean, they're not sketchy, but they're not as solid as we know the statistics for counseling for tobacco use. But there's no reason to believe that it wouldn't be effective if a physician talked with their patient and guided their patient through some small changes to address their alcohol use. The issue really for healthcare providers is that they're just overwhelmed with all of the things that they have to talk with their patient about: mental health, alcohol use, tobacco use, physical activity. Do you have enough access to healthy food? All of those things are just starting to pile up for physicians, and it does get kind of overwhelming. So alcohol does kind of get, I think, left as an afterthought. And part of it is that we all struggle with our own thoughts about our alcohol use. And that, I think, is probably the biggest issue with changing the culture, is that alcohol is so embedded in our culture, and it's a legal drug, and most people have great memories and consequences from alcohol use, you know, parties and things like that. It leaves you with a good feeling about alcohol. And so I think that most people are a little unsure about whether or not this is good or not.
We are talking with Dr. Brenda Rooney, who co-directs the health promotion and disease prevention activities for Gunderson Health System. And we are talking about this new report from the CDC that found excessive drinking is the fourth leading cause of preventable death in the United States. We're talking about the problems associated with excessive drinking and how to handle them. How do we reduce the number of deaths associated with alcohol abuse? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking about a new report from the CDC saying excessive drinking is the fourth leading cause of preventable death in the United States. Why is this, and what can we do about it? How concerned are you about excessive drinking? What kinds of practices or policies do you think should be implemented to curb binge drinking or alcohol abuse? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. The author of the CDC paper thought raising the alcohol tax was one option, and encouraging doctors to talk more with their patients about alcohol abuse, another possible remedy. What do you think? So we've got some callers, so let's go to John in Madison. Hi, John.
Hi. These questions are a bit off topic, but is any amount of alcohol safe during pregnancy for the woman? And also, I've heard a lot of reports about the cardioprotective effects of taking a small daily amount of alcohol, especially for the older person. Could you give me your opinions on this?
Not off topic at all. Thanks, John. Dr. Rooney?
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, I believe, released recommendations that it was acceptable for females to consume no more than one alcoholic beverage, or occasional use during pregnancy was acceptable. And I don't have the exact facts on my at my fingertips right now, but they did release that it was okay for occasional use. But talking to most of my obstetric friends and colleagues, they would not ever recommend that it's okay for women to drink during pregnancy. The relationship between alcohol and fetal alcohol syndrome is so strong that I don't think anyone wants to be the person to say it's okay to have an alcoholic drink. But I do think that for females who had an alcoholic beverage before they realized they were pregnant, or maybe if there was a special event and having one alcoholic beverage is not going to be causing major issues for that fetus or for the baby. So that's that issue. I would never recommend that women drink during pregnancy. The second is the issue you bring up about heart disease, and that is, I think, where the why we also struggle with the whole issue of alcohol and safe use is that there are cardio benefits to alcohol consumption in small amounts. So a lot of the research out there, there's many, many articles that say one alcoholic beverage a day for males, one or two for males, one for females, has a benefit to your heart health. The issue is that a lot of times people have problems with portion size, and so one alcoholic beverage isn't a 4-ounce glass of wine. It might be an 8-ounce glass of wine, and so forth. And so, and I think once people have one, it's really easy to have two. So that, I think, is the issue with those recommendations. And then if you do the math, one alcoholic beverage a day for a female is 7 in a week, and they just defined heavy alcohol consumption as 8. So, again, and back to portion size, that most people are probably having 8 if they're having one a day.
Well, let's go next. Thanks, John, for the call. Chuck in Onalaska is with us. Hello, Chuck.
Hi. Say, I wanted to provide a little bit more insight as a physician into the issue of why physicians may at times not do a very good job of counseling patients related to alcohol use or drugs or tobacco use. And we just conducted a survey on this subject, and it's not published yet, but we found that almost all physicians acknowledged that they had a strong responsibility to discuss these issues with patients. But one of the barriers to this was the fact that they felt that their counseling was ineffective. That is, the ability by counseling patients to give up addictions to either drugs, alcohol, or tobacco was so strong that our capabilities of changing their attitudes or getting them to change their behavior was very frustratingly low.
Yeah, I understand that. Doctor, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead, Chuck.
The other factor that we found that I think is very interesting is the fact that many physicians didn't feel that they had adequate resources either in their community or within their organizations to address patients' needs. And I think that there are a lot of resources available, but unfortunately the physicians were unaware of how to access them. So,
like getting somebody in for, you know, I don't know, alcoholism treatment, that kind of thing.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, Dr. Rooney, your reaction to that?
Yeah, actually that I think goes along with what we saw with tobacco as well, is most physicians felt that telling their patient to quit smoking was not going to help. So they needed tools to help them move through stages of change to become more ready to quit and to see the benefits of quitting. And so with tobacco, we've learned, and we're learning the same with alcohol, is to have the right person asking the question, first of all, and having the physician serve as the reinforcer, and then to really walk the patient through a series of brief intervention. And that's actually one of the strategies that's highly recommended is something called ESBIRT, or screening brief intervention and treatment. So it really is a process for patients to go through that uses motivational interviewing, and it's a very brief process, but it moves people from realizing that there's an issue to starting to work on it and doing something about it. And that is evidence-based.
Dr. Rooney, are there any other recommendations that you think would be effective in cutting down on alcohol-related deaths?
Well, I think there isn't going to be one thing that's going to fix the problem. We just recently passed a social host ordinance in the city of La Crosse, and we passed it in the city of Onalaska. And a number of cities around the state of Wisconsin are passing social host ordinances. And what that does is it cuts back on the house parties for underage adults. But that's not going to fix the problem. You know, we have to probably address this from a multitude of directions, and we like to look at it as a public health problem. And so we focus on not only the environment that the person can drink alcohol in, but we look at some issues around the host, like what their age is and how they're consuming alcohol, and we look at the agent itself, alcohol, and how is it priced, how is it served, how is it sold, can we control how it's sold a little bit better. There's keg registration laws, and that the community guide that's a national document that talks about effective things has a number of things that are effective, looking at trying to limit outlet density. So where you have major areas where there's lots of bars, mm-hmm. try to limit that, limit the hours of sale and the days of sale, and dram shop liability, which would hold the retailer who sold the alcohol to the person who then went and crashed and died or killed somebody or did something bad.
We could do a whole hour on all
Absolutely.
Of these different things there, so maybe we will. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yep. Thank
Dr.
you.
Brenda Rooney co-directs the health promotion and disease prevention activities for Gunderson Health System. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.